Welcome back to Scoreheads, the podcast that celebrates the music of your favourite films, TV shows and video games by going behind the scenes of the composing industry and having in-depth conversations with those that make the notes that emote. I'm John Brown, and joining me for each Scoreheads episode is my good friend, film music journalist and author Sean Wilson. And for this latest instalment, we're crashing through the sugar glass windows of your listening space to light up a fire in your ears with the return of the mighty Mr. Dominic Lewis as our guest. Yes, that's right, the British-born, LA-residing, multi-talented musical magician has pulled some sonic stunts of his own recently, re-teaming with iconic action director David Leitch on his cinematic adaptation of the TV classic The Fall Guy, with Hollywood heavyweights Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt starring in a film that goes big on stunts, stars, music, magic, action, adventure, laughs, and even bigger, on heart. So lend us your ear, dear listener, whilst we get our 80s on for the best film you never saw in the 90s, but we'll be very glad if you go and see it now. A supremely fun and uplifting ode to movies of those times, composed by that super chap that brought you the music for The Man in the High Castle, Money Monster, Peter Rabbit, Peter Rabbit 2, Jolt, The King's Man, Bullet Train, Spirited, Kaleidoscope, Violent Night, and many, many more. Sean and I caught up with Dom to discuss the musical heat behind the Fall Guy's beat here on your latest episode of Scoreheads.
In 3, 2, 1, action.
Yeah. Oh, so good. Good.
Good.
Shout to the heart and your.
Anyone but him. I didn't approve him. You know that.
You are literally the last person on earth I want to see.
You've been a ghost.
No phone call, no text.
It's not like I didn't want to apologize.
You don't have to explain anything. It was just a flame. So how have you been?
God, I hate that thumbs up stuff kind of stuff.
Dom, it's been over a year since I spoke to you. I can't believe that. Because it was for Violent Night, yeah.
And
yeah,
that's what a strike will do.
Great film. It just feels like, yeah, but it just feels like it was last Christmas, but it wasn't. It was the Christmas before. It's insane.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. Respect, that film starts off in Bristol and I'm in Bristol. So I was like, yes.
Yeah.
I'm playing Bristol.
That was my idea, by the way.
Was it?
Yes. Because they had, what did they had? They had like, because it was filmed in Canada. So they had like, I don't know. It was an English town that looked nothing like that. And I'm like scanning the picture going, it doesn't look like anywhere in England, but maybe Bristol. And so they went, all right, fine, you're English. We'll take the word for it.
Yes. If you were there, or if I was there with you, I'd shake your hand.
Amazing.
Massive respect, yeah.
Because my mum lived in Bristol for a long time. She lived in Clifton for years.
Yeah.
There you go.
So I was like, it looks a bit like that, but not really.
It's all right. It's but you know, the ironic thing is that Bristol's got the Christmas Steps pub. And I was like, oh, if there was only a way to AI that in there, but it would have probably taken too much effort.
Not enough money for that, I think.
Yeah.
And we're off.
Yeah.
Here on the radio and on the podcast. Welcome, John Brown and Sean Wilson, giving a huge warm welcome back to the magnificent, the one and only, and composer of quite possibly my favourite film so far this year, Mr. Dom Lewis.
How are you, sir? What an intro. Thank you so much.
I love it. I love The Fall Guy so much. I can't wait to watch it again. I've been so busy. In fact, if I wasn't, it was one of those films that I came out of it and my buddy and I looked at each other and said, we need to watch this again as soon as possible.
I love that.
Scheduling permitting. But if I'd have had the day off, I would have walked all the way back around and started over there and then. Simply.
That's very cool to hear.
That's my review. Anyway, I know Sean loved it too, which is news.
Yeah. It was actually, Dom, you and I were just discussing off air about how I came out of the film saying that it felt like a film that had escaped from the 1990s, and I meant that as a huge compliment, and you said that was part of the mission statement of the whole project, right?
100%. You know, it's a love letter to movies, it's a love letter to stunts, and I was trying to make it a love letter to those 90s scores as well. I mean, you know, there's influences from the 70s and the 80s, of course, because I can't help myself, but yeah, it was. It's a love letter to that era, and you know those movies that you and I as kids kind of fell in love with, and I think the cinema is lacking these days. So great that it's out. It's great that people are loving it. And I love that you guys love it. So that's awesome.
Oh, it's so, it just makes you feel, that's, you know, cinema is escapism. And that's what it does. It's classic escapism. And you just referencing there about A Love Letter to 90s Scores. I don't know, I said this to you before about Violent Night as well. And I love this, and take this as the highest compliment, by the way. But I always get big, that's the second time from you now, man. Maybe the third time I've had big Michael Kamen vibes from something you were doing, like big time.
Oh, that's a huge compliment. I mean, he's one of my heroes. Yeah, we lost him too soon. I mean, there were elements of that that were even more Kamen, but I was, you know, it was, I was trying to like keep it me and not be so, you know, derivative of Kamen. And he's a massive influence. You know, Faltermeyer at the beginning was a huge influence. And all those guys that, you know, aren't John Williams, aren't Alan Silvestri, don't do like the really kind of amazing floral orchestral stuff. Mm. I really wanted to shine a light on that like alt 90s score that obviously Michael is a huge name and very famous. But, you know, there are a lot of scores out there that you wouldn't necessarily know who did them. You know, the slightly different side of film music. So I was kind of trying to channel that as well.
Well, yeah. On that note, just elaborating on that point, any specific touchstones for those kind of scores that you've just described? Any specific composers?
I mean, not really. I was saying the other day in an interview that the score is like a massive stew of all my influences, just kind of like spewing out my head. You know, like Bullet Train was very much changed the channel. It was like one genre, then another genre, and another genre, and then something I'd mix two together. But it was very like schizophrenic in its makeup on purpose. And this one is like all of the genres just mixed up, thrown in a big pot, stew it up. And what comes out is more homogenous, I think. It's more of one sound from start to finish. And obviously Kiss is a big part of that. Mm-hmm. But I was trying to get the palette to be homogenous and not so wacko gonzo like Bullet Train was.
I remember last time we spoke, you told me that David recruited you for his next project, which of course would turn out to be The Fall Guy. What were those early conversations like? What kind of conversations were you having together at the very beginning about what it should sound like, what he would like it to sound like, etc.?
I mean, the first conversation was literally about Kiss. it was in the script. It was like the final song before the end credits, everything's okay kind of thing. And we were just chatting about it because we were trying to like, you know, what is the perfect mixture of cool and kitsch? Mm. And it's like, we couldn't think of any other band other than Kiss. I mean, Kiss was perfect. And so the conversations were like, well, what if we had like loads of Kiss songs and it was like, it made up the whole score and we were like bringing covers and all this kind of thing. Because initially it was part of the script in terms of, they'd gone to their first date or something. They went to a Kiss concert and, you know, he bought her a Kiss t-shirt and it was like that ingrained into the script. So it was always Dave's North Star. And I, you know, when he went away to film, I went off down my rabbit hole and started going down the 80s route and it was, you know, kind of too goofy and not cool enough. And so he came back and we had the conversation and, you know, we just couldn't get rid of I Was Made for Loving You as the North Star for this movie, as if it was like Colt's theme, if you will, almost like the music in his head as he's doing all this stuff. He's like singing it as he's going along. That's kind of what we were feeling. So then I just started dissecting it. You know, I took the riff from the beginning, chorus melody, Gene's bass line here and there. I kind of mess with that a bit because it's just sort of a disco kinetic bass line, which is super cool for action. It worked great. And I played, the first cue I played him was when after the Taylor Swift, had to follow that. Yeah. After the Taylor Swift.
Hard act to follow.
Yeah, exactly. You know, he drives into the dock and then he climbs up the steps and he goes into Sunrise's apartment. So that's like the first time you really hear it as the score. That's the first cue I played for Dave. And he was like, yeah, keep going. Yeah. That's it. But at that point, we didn't have permission. So we were just like,
winging it.
Okay, I guess we'll just go until we're told we can't. That was cool. It worked great. And also my theme has a very similar chord structure on purpose to a Kiss song. So then as we move further down the line into the movie, you can mix them up and it all just like blends together nicely. So I hope, I think.
Yes, very much so.
Well, yeah, it had me on my toes because that scene that you just described, that's the exact moment. I think that might be the first time we hear the Kiss melody quoted. And I was like, when he scales and comes up to the apartment, I was like, I know that. I've heard that riff somewhere before. And then it kind of came to me halfway through the film. I was like, oh, that's interesting. And I was like, the idea of interweaving those existing song chords and that melody into the score, I thought was a really interesting idea because it reinforces what a kind of retro, fun, old-fashioned experience the film is, which I thought was a really interesting thing. In terms of like permissions to use that, did you have to go to Gene Simmons or his people and have discussions with them about that?
I mean, I didn't, but Universal Music did.
Perfect answer.
Yeah, no, and they were great, honestly. They were super supportive. Well, their people were. I didn't have any contact with Kiss, so I don't know. But yeah, I mean, it's awesome to be able to use that stuff. I mean, it's such an iconic song, an iconic riff. And you probably thought I was ripping people off up until the middle of the film. You were like, wait a minute. I'm just like really ripped off this riff.
No, I actually thought it was an original. I thought it was an original melody that sounded like something
I recognized.
So I was really discombobulated.
Well, that's kind of the point. Like, that's the way I wanted to use the material because we have Kiss twice and it'd be like bookending the movie. And we got the cover in, like, you know, the beginning of the third act. It was very important to me that you did feel that way and not go, oh, not this song again. Why do they keep doing this song?
Yeah.
It was important that it became a theme as opposed to like a snippet of the song. So that's why I was messing around with it so much. That's why I kind of pushed my 80s agenda onto it a little bit and, you know, constantly weaving my stuff in and out of it as well. So it didn't just feel like we were hitting play on the song every time, you know?
Mm. Without spoiling it for anyone that hasn't seen it yet, I will ask this, and perhaps without going into too much detail about what's going on, but whose idea was Phil Collins?
I kind of want to say it was mine, but I don't know if I should take credit for it because I think it was sort of a joint decision. All I'll say is that way before I even started writing music on it, I had a phone conversation with Dave and Kelly, and we were talking about like what would be really good duets to do, like a love duet, as if, you know, to basically represent Jody and Colt's characters. And the winner for me was that song. And I didn't go, you got to use this. I just sort of, after the conversation, I'm going through songs, I think this is probably the one that fits the best lyrically. And I knew the scene it was intended for, so I think this is going to work the best. So I don't know if Dave and Kelly would agree that it was my idea, but I'm going to take it. I'm going to say it was me.
You heard it here first, folks.
Yeah, right.
Because actually, the other thing I was going to ask was, it feels way more epic than I remember it. Did you add anything to it?
That's a good ear. Yes, I did. I did. Yeah, I added a massive orchestra behind it.
Because that's what I thought.
There's strings in the original, but they sort of sound synthy and they're not very overt. So, yeah, Dave asked me, he had the same thing. He was like, I need it to be massive. And it's almost there, but it just needs that help.
Yeah.
Because the scene is so crazy. So, yeah, I got stuck in. And behind it, I've actually woven in the theme, my theme in there. Within string arrangement, and then the horns did a bit later, so it's all, you know, again doing this homogenous thing. So yeah, well spotted.
I'm gonna guess this is a whole label thing and a rights thing, but will that version ever be released? Because the first thing, like among many, there's so many treasures in the album, which we'll get to when you listen to the score album. But I noticed, obviously, that I was like, it's not in there. But then it's a perfect album anyway. But I was looking for it. I was like, I wonder if they'll ever release that. Because I swore, I knew you did something. Because there was just something so amazing about it, right? Like, when I was watching it in the cinema, that whole scene anyway. I mean, every frame of that, the way the action's choreographed, like, the way it's cut, the way it's shot, everything about that scene is perfect. And then in you come and just give it everything to this already iconic song. And I'm just sat there, and you know, the whole hairs on the arms, I was like, oh my God, he's done something to this, because it just brings it up, right? But then I was like, I wonder if they'll ever release that version.
Oh, you know what? I was going to. It was on the. It was on the soundtrack for a while.
What?
For a while, and I was talking with Rachel at Universal, and I was like, "Are we allowed to put it on?" She's like, "Yeah, we can put it on." And then I don't know. I was talking with my music editor Dan Pinder when we were putting it together, and just as a flow, broke it up too much, and it wasn't that. I mean. I'll admit, within the movie, it really speaks. But then when you play it by itself, it's me personally. I was just sort of messed with the original. Like it doesn't work as a on its own. It works because it's in this epic sequence. Hmm. So it didn't get on there. But I can send it to you.
Yes, please.
Thank I won't you. Tell anyone.
Thank you so much.
Let's not
tell anyone.
I'll send it to you.
We'll keep that strictly to ourselves.
Yeah.
Please do though, because I will literally have that on loop. I mean, the whole album's been on loop like forever, and there's a couple of tracks which we'll get into in a bit. I don't know, Sean wants to ask a question, but yeah, that was on my list of things that I loved about the movie.
But that was the whole thing, you know. That there were so many versions of that to the point where Emily had done it on set. Mm. And an awesome performance, but she'd done it very much in the kind of karaoke way. You've had a few drinks, yeah, you don't sound great.
Because she's a great singer, actually.
She is a great singer. And I said to Dave, I was like, I do think we probably should redo some of this stuff. I think we should probably get her to sing it so you get swept up in this like, amazing moment of action juxtaposed with her singing and bearing her soul to her cast mates and your friends. And I just felt like those little moments that were out of tune personally pulled me out. So she came in and she was utterly unbelievable. Like I've never seen such professionalism. She was so on it, the ADR that she did, and she nailed it. And it just, for me, it just lifted it to that next level. As opposed to being, oh, this is fun, because, you know, oh, yeah, she's singing and the song's going. It felt a bit like that, and it was very charming and cute.
Yeah.
Whereas with that new performance, it was like, this movie's awesome and epic and massive, and I'm getting swept along with it, and just take me for the ride, and she sounds great, and, oh, don't we love her? She's amazing. So, yeah, that was a whole thing.
I'm getting goosebumps about it.
I've seen comments like, we need the Jodie version of this song. And
yeah, you're going to...
You know, we spoke about that too. We're like, well, why we could do that. And yeah. But I think it wasn't right for it to be like an amazing version of it. It just needed to kind of slot into what we were trying to do cinematically.
I mean, I was gonna ask a relatively sober question. I want to keep this going now. Are we gonna get a B side of material like on the album? Are we gonna get like a B side where that might be included along with other cuts? No.
An expanded edition.
No. I didn't. I mean, honestly, I didn't really leave anything off. Anything I felt like people needed to hear, I put on there. Mm. You know, that last track on the album, "Ain't No Galaxy," was like. From way, way back in the beginning of the process where I was pushing my 80s agenda. and, you know, that scene ended up on the cutting room floor. But I was just like, it's got the theme in it. It's still like, I know it's very 80s, but you still kind of feel the Fall Guy from it and you feel the movie from it. Also, I'm talking about unicorns. So it's just like, it just has to go in there. So I whacked it on the end and no one pushed back. So it's there, thankfully. And a lot of people have reached out and said, this track's wicked.
Yeah,
where
is it
in the film? And I'm like, it's not there.
It's three tracks, isn't there? There's three tracks right after that cue, by the way, the Fall Guy. Oh, my God.
Oh, that was fun, that one.
That one's going to turn up. I've obviously got the album, which is amazing, but also on Spotify, because it's on in the background, I keep putting it, every time it pops up on Spotify, I keep putting it back to the beginning. So I reckon you're going to end up my most listened to artist.
Yes!
Track.
I love that.
Even though I've got the album right there, it's like, oh, well, Spotify's already on in the background or whatever. But
the funny story about that one was that because of the strike, we had to do the dub in two stages.
Yeah.
That sounds confusing because you dub on a stage. I meant in two different time periods.
Mm-hmm.
So I had my initial mix of that track, which was great. And then we sort of like drew a line under the dub in whatever month that was.
Yeah.
And then we came back to do the dub and it was like, I just felt that we weren't getting the emotion from it because there's so much stuff in that track. There's so many drums, there's so many guitars, there's so much synths, there's voices, there's just everything just like kitchen sink. And I felt like the dubbing engineer was pulling everything down because he couldn't get everything to fit with the crazy helicopters and the explosions and the dialogue and everything that was going on.
Yeah.
So I was like, I want to rejiggle this. So I rejiggled the mix to be orchestra forward and let the, because the orchestra is doing such amazing stuff. And I just, yeah. I had this like vivid memory of being on the stage at Abbey Road, just like tingles. Like, and I know it's my own music and that's very arrogant, but it was like, it was such a moment for me hearing them like scrubbing away in the whole orchestra in one room. It was just awesome. And I was like, I want that feeling back because yeah. the mix is great and now it's got all the elements, but I'm not, I want to feel that feeling I felt at Abbey Road. So I just switched the perspective. So the orchestra took the forefront of it and then everything else is still in there. So when we went back to the dub stage for the second lot of the dub, I got the mixer to put it in and it was like, so awesome. I think it just took it to that next level of emotion, of action. Of, it just had everything. You could hear everything. You could hear the sound effects. You could hear the music. You'd hear the themes. So I was really glad I did that. And that's the version that's on the soundtrack, the orchestra forward one.
Were you watching it back in the movie? Did it kind of just make your hair stand up on end like it does for us? To have that same kind of feeling of emotion? And because that just went right through me like a literally like a bullet train. There you go. But yeah. I just wonder how it is,
you know,
for
what
you.
It does. It's
you,
a weird yeah. feeling when you've written it and it's your stuff to for it to have that effect on you. And actually, not necessarily the LA premiere, because I was right at the front and I had some weird reflections going on in that cinema. But at South by Southwest, one, the crowd was phenomenal. They were cheering and clapping and crying and laughing. And especially in that last scene when everyone's like so with Colt and Jody and the music's blaring. I got the hair stood up and I got a little like watery eyed. I was like, what are you doing? Put yourself together. It's pathetic. But it was a really lovely moment because I felt like not necessarily like I've arrived, but I felt like this was a big deal for me. Like everyone's into this movie. Everyone's loving the score. And then it was very overwhelming in a great way.
Well, this is your third collaboration, I believe, with David Leitch, following Bullet Train and then Violent Night, which he produced, and now this. What are his musical instincts? What's the nature of your working relationship with him?
He's the best. I mean, he's got such good musical instincts, him and Kelly, and he's very trusting. He knows where he needs to hand the keys over. And, you know, when we were having issues with the tone of the beginning, because they were still trying to cut together the tone of Ryan's performance, because yes, he was being cool, but there was also some more kind of comedic goofy moments that I think were hurting his vibe and his swagger, you know, because you want Colt Seavers to be really cool. So Dave drove down here and he was like, listen, I love what you're doing, like the 80s things, you know, I love it, it's cool. I'm wondering whether we need to kind of try something different just to see. And he was like, tell me to shut up. Honestly, if you really believe in this, I'm with you 100%. And you just don't get that from everyone you work with. I mean, the trust is unbelievable. The collaboration is second to none. And you want to get it right. You want that moment where you play the driving into the harbor and running up the steps. And he's like, you see his eyes go and he can see what the music's going to be. So it wasn't about me feeling like it was the right thing. It was about me making sure his vision was being met. Everyone was happy. And he's just a dream to work with for. It's awesome. I hope we do thousands more because he's just the best.
What's been your absolute favorite moment of this process? I'm sure there's been many, but what is there a particular standout one that stands above the rest?
Of the Fall Guy process? I mean, it was recording at Abbey Road.
Yeah. Good answer.
I've been very fortunate enough to do it a few times now, and also kind of grew up there because my dad was a session musician and I used to like have lunch with him, and I was there during college. I was there most weeks having lunch. And even as a 15-year-old kid, you know, going to see Rupert and Harry and Hans' sessions and Greg Armstrong, you know, so I've almost grown up there. But when you're sitting in that chair and you've got 80 people sitting out there playing your music, And then you look around and Dave's there, Kelly's there, Rachel from Universal's there. You look the other way, my mum and my dad are sitting on the couch, who aren't together, by the way. They're divorced, but they're like, they're so, you know. And it was such a beautiful moment to be able to do that, you know. And I got to work with Sam O'Kell for the first time in Studio 2, the Beatles studio. We did a bunch of cool stuff in there. And even though, like, the tape op and my orchestrator went down with COVID, it didn't taint any of it. It was just such an incredible experience, because on Bullet Train, I didn't get to do that with Dave and Kelly because they were so involved in the cut still and trying to figure stuff out. I think he popped into Capitol once, but it was so quick. But I mean, he was there taking video, and then Hannah Waddingham came in to visit, and it was such a magical experience. It's just, I live for that. I live for recording, because I grew up with those guys. They're all my dad's mates sitting out playing for me, I'm getting like a bit choked up thinking about it, because it is just such a phenomenal experience.
Did you feel like you'd come home?
Yeah. And normally I don't want to go home because the weather's rubbish.
yeah. Tell us about it.
The weather was phenomenal. It was like end of August, I think. And we were blessed with beautiful weather and beautiful musicians and just an all round incredible experience.
I was really interested there when you said your dad was a session musician at Abbey Road. Like, what was the stuff that he worked on?
Oh, anything and everything. I mean, he was a cellist. You know, he's worked on everything from Harry Potter to Gladiator to Kate Bush to Vanessa Williams to you name it. Any Zimmer, like, he's been on it all for 20 years or however long he was doing it. So, yeah, I mean, he's very sweet. He says to people, he's like, yeah, I used to be Tony Lewis, but now I'm Dom's dad. he's a total sweetheart. But I mean, it kind of does feel like that, because, you know, his friends are now my friends, and now we're working together, and it feels like a really lovely rite of passage. Not that he was a composer, but it's just, yeah, going home and getting to record with people you love and have known for years is so special. Not that recording in LA isn't, but it's a different thing.
You said about, obviously, Emily came in to do a session, and working with David, of course, is a massive treat. I'm assuming you met Ryan somewhere in this process, and what was he like?
I did. I briefly met Ryan at South By on the red carpet. He was like, we've met, right? I was like, no. Maybe I look like someone else, but it was very quick. He's very nice. But and then, you know, the next time I met him, he was dressed up as Beavis. So
yeah, I saw that.
He was in character. So I mean, I was expecting him to be like, oh, good to see you again or whatever, but no, he was Dean or whatever his character's name was from SNL, dressed up as Beavis. I had no idea what to do in that moment. It was so bizarre.
Was he just making like guttural noises? Like, I mean, I haven't seen Beavis and Butthead for such a long time. But yeah,
that's the thing. They weren't actually being Beavis and Butthead. They were the characters from the SNL sketch.
Yep.
That look like Beavis and Butthead. So his character was Dean, and I can't remember Mikey Day's character, but they weren't actually like, you know, like they weren't doing all that. Yeah, it was wild. But the nice thing about that whole experience was that, you know, when you've been to South By and you've hung out with them and, you know, you've had a few drinks with Hannah and Emily and you've just like been chatting, when you see them again, it's a really nice experience. It's sort of like validates your existence, if you will, because I think my publicist said to Hannah, oh, can I introduce you to the composer? And Hannah's like, I don't need an intro. And then she started doing this dance and was like, we got the memo, we got the memo, because we were both in these like vivid blue suits.
Yeah, I saw that.
And she's a total sweetheart. So it's really nice to be just a part of that.
Do you feel very much now, I guess you are very much part of the 87 North family, and hopefully that continues long into the future.
I really do feel like I've been accepted into the family, and it's a really lovely feeling to be able to work with people that you can call friends and that support you and are so generous and give to your career. It's just, yeah, it's a really wonderful feeling, which you don't think you're going to get that involved when you work in Hollywood. You expect like good relationships and, you know, nice working environments. But with Dave and Kelly, it's just like, yeah, it does feel like a family. It really does. It's really lovely. And like I was saying earlier, you just want to do your best for them because they're so generous and so giving and such wonderful collaborators. You want everything to just be the best. Mm. And I think on this one, if I'm being honest, it wasn't as smooth as Bullet Train. Finding the tone, finding the sound, incorporating Kiss, like navigating this different thing for all of us, really, was a challenge. But they realized it too. And it wasn't like, oh, why aren't you getting it? It was like, oh, how are we going to solve this? Like, what if we try this? It was really a family collaboration. So, yeah, it's a very special thing that I don't take for granted. And I grab it with both hands. It's awesome.
I'm going to be sick. You got this. You're the one.
Why are you gonna say that? Why are you gonna say that?
You've done this a million times.
And so have you. You know, you just jinxed it.
You just jinxed it!
Dan, I need to drive it in the car now, please. Hey, the tide's coming up. Thank you so much. Appreciate you.
Is that Jody?
Yes, it's Jody.
Radio's got a clean image.
She say something about me?
Stop it. Your face? Stop it. Stop it. She didn't say anything about you.
Good. Caught some Miami Vice in there as well, which was awesome.
Yeah, that was fun. That was super fun. Yeah, that's the original Miami Vice track. I was very adamant that I didn't want to try and recreate it and not do it justice. So, yeah, my job was just trying to get in and to get out of it in the best possible way. So, you know, I would put in some Miami Vice-esque percussion elements and synth stuff on the way in and on the way out. But, yeah, to get to use that was cool. And that was always going to be that. Dave was like, steer clear of that bit. No, don't score that. That's going to be a very specific joke.
So Jan Hammer and Miami Vice, that was one of those things you remember like growing up with that. And that was like one of those important cultural touchstones, I imagine.
Exactly. Yeah, for sure. All of that stuff. You know, people have asked me, did you go back and listen to The Fall Guy? Did you go back and listen to Metal Storm? And it's like, no, I didn't do that because I didn't want to copy those things. But the inspiration of Jan Hammer and Faltermeyer and Kamen, and I'm blanking on other names of that era. But yeah, it was about shining a light on that style of scoring and making it my own, you know, obviously not copying it, but just like taking it as inspiration as we do as composers, along with, you know, Peter Gabriel and Michael Jackson and Kiss and Metallica and like all the stuff that was going on in my head, just like throwing it at the wall and seeing what happened.
I said to you, didn't I, when we had a conversation previously over messaging, I said that it's very obvious that you've thrown everything, including the kitchen sink and all of your heart, into this. And it reminded me of a beautiful video that, for anyone that's seen Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, on the features, there's that beautiful video about the scoring sessions, and Michael Kamen shows, I think it's Kevin Reynolds and Kevin Costner, the Everything I Do, that kind of moment where it really swells for the first time and you see it to picture, and Michael Kamen does this thing where he's going, ah, like this, and like all of his heart and everything is in this. That's what I thought of when I was listening to the Fall Guy cue. I thought, this is your moment, man. This is your Everything I Do, right? With that big, you know, that 525, I think it is, cue that's, like you said, at the bottom of the album there. I was like, this is his moment. This is his, do you know what I mean? Like,
everything was my moment.
Yeah.
Because there's not a lot of space in this film. There's a lot of needle drops and there's a lot of specific underscore where you have to kind of be in and be out. And even in like the car chase, when they're chasing the trash truck and they go through the tunnel and all that sequence, that was all intercut with karaoke. So you're gaining momentum and having enough space to use theme and to really get that whole idea across. It was all had to be really calculated. Like, I'm going to drop a little bit of theme in there and then the ostinato will be made out of the theme. So when eventually we get to the track that's called The Fall Guy, it was like me going, yes, I finally got the moment to just let everything rip. So you're absolutely right. Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. That was my time to shine. Like, check out what I can do, guys. So yeah, no, but it was good. It was good to be disciplined throughout, because I think that's why that ending really pays off.
Yeah, I think someone's going to have to bleep me for this later. But I literally turned to my friend and went, that score, man. It is not taking any prisoners. And there's people looking at me really strange in the cinema because I'm like, yes, Dom, Yes! I was thought I was absolutely mental.
So, oh, I love that. That's awesome.
Sean.
Don, when I was thinking of questions to ask you, I looked on your, this is not necessarily to do with the Fall Guy necessarily, but I looked on your Instagram page and there was the highlight which just said Michael Caine, and I looked at it and I thought, ah.
Uh-oh. I see where this is going.
And you got full-time composer, part-time Michael Caine impressionist.
Hang on.
Only when I've got a cold. It doesn't sound right when I have a cold.
You see,
I believe that's the video you probably saw. I'm in my car and I've got a bit of a sniffle. And yeah, for some reason, when I've got a sniffle, I can put out the Michael Caine.
So Sean is our resident Michael Caine impressionist. This is why this is relevant.
Oh, I love that.
So I kind of feel like there might be a Michael Caine off coming any minute.
And oh, God.
Feel free, boys. Feel free.
No, I can't do the Michael Caine impression if there's only one of us. I could only do the both. You know, only the one. It doesn't seem entirely fair. Otherwise,
I've got a bit of a higher Michael Caine.
Yeah, you got the young Caine.
I've got the sort of you. You're only supposed to play the bloody doors up.
Oh, that is. Oh, it's making me very emotional remembering my younger self. Oh, this is back what I used to sound like. I can't hold it.
My impression is basically just either Steve Coogan or Rob Brydon's.
Dom, do yours again.
That's basically my impression.
Dom, do yours again, just for...
You're only supposed to blow the bloody doors off.
That is amazing. And that's without a cold as well.
Yeah, well, it's the higher one, so it's easier to do.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
But yeah, you know what? I used to... I think I've got a video somewhere. I used to read my kids The Snail and the Whale. In a Michael Caine voice.
Michael Caine voice.
A snail and a whale. Yeah, we used to do the whole book with it. And my wife caught me doing it, and she's got it on video somewhere. So I'll have to find that for you guys. But actually, speaking of Michael Caine impressions, if you listen to Ain't No Galaxy, just before the last chorus, I go, and the Oscar goes to...
Yes,
in that song. So bringing it full circle.
Oh, it all wraps up perfectly.
Oh, look at that! Amazing. Very quickly before we go, just one last one from me, because we're almost out of time, guys. But I want to say thanks, Dom. What are you working on next? Obviously, we're all kind of... I think we should all just go back and watch Fall Guy many times over. But obviously, you have to pay bills and things. So what have you got coming up next, Tom?
Have I signed everything? I think we're all good to tell people now that I'm actually got work. I'm doing an amazing TV show called Sinking Spring with Apple and Scott Free Productions.
Ooh.
And that's got Brian Tyree Henry in it. And it's so cool. So I can't wait for that. It's still early doors. We're still kind of at the beginning of the process, but it's really, really good. And then I am doing the next 87 North film with Love.
Oh, cool.
I'm so excited. Yeah. So that'll start probably, I don't know, in the summer at some point. I think they're filming it now. So that'll be fun.
87 North resident composer Dom Lewis.
Yeah, right. Seriously. And I'll keep it that way. I'm perfectly happy being that. It's awesome.
Dom, you've been amazing. Thank you so much for your time. I could do this literally all day because it is just the best film out there right now. It's called The Fall Guy. It's in cinemas, but also make sure you get Dom's record. It's from Backlot Music. Get it. You will love it, especially if you've seen the movie. Go home, listen to it again and again and again like we did. Dom, thank you so much, mate.
Thank you for having me. What a blast.
They were trying to kill me. And not in a fun way. You can make it, You can't make it. It's too dangerous. Gotta be stairs. Okay.
What happened to your face? You look terrible.
You look amazing.
You fall down, you get right back up. How far would you go for the one that you love?
I'll buy you a drink when this is over. Engage your core.
Yeah, boy. Stop.
What are you doing later? Want to go to a beach somewhere?
Drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
And that brings us to a close for this latest episode of Scoreheads. Thank you so much to our guest, the awesome Dominic Lewis, and to my good friend, Mr. Sean Wilson. And thank you too for listening. The Magnificent The Fall Guy is currently playing in cinemas, and as always, you can of course see it at Vue. And many thanks to Vue Cinemas once more for their support, including with this very show. To find your nearest Vue, head on over to myvue.com. To get more updates from us, then by all means follow at Need A Bigger Pod on socials. I'm also at John Brown TV. That's at J-O-N at John Brown TV on all platforms. Or you can follow Sean on X at Seano, S-E-A-N, that's at Seano22, or Instagram at Sean Filmwriter. Until next time, thank you, and please enjoy spicy margaritas responsibly. And if you see a unicorn, you should probably see a doctor. Good night.